here, as I was saying, we'll try a little bit of an experiment today. If we do a review of what we've been learning, then we'll try to learn a Tosis. That could be an introduction to the Ian Shear if you're around at 10:35 today. Try to learn a little bit of the Ian. Surah Kaf Daled on the base, and we're focused on the machlokes, if you recall, between the sheet of Rami Bar Choma and the sheet of Rav Sheshes about the psul of Mesachik B'Kuvia. And the question is, are we dealing with someone who's an exclusive gambler? That's all he does with his life. He has nothing, no other occupation whatsoever. And that's the sheet of Rav Sheshes. Or even an occasional gambler, and that's the sheet of Rami Bar Choma. He too is disqualified as a witness or as a judge because of a principle which is called asmachta. So if you take a look at the Gemara, counting up approximately, let's say, 10 lines up from the bottom of the page, Mesachi B'Kuvia Maika Ovid, why should we disqualify a gambler from testimony? And the answer is, Amir Rav Chaim Yishum Dami Asmachta V'Asmachta Lo Kanya. So let's just review Rashi Shita. According to Rashi, the problem of asmachta is when a person commits himself to a penalty. He either wants to demonstrate to someone else how absolutely committed he is to do whatever he has to do, that he accepts upon himself a penalty. We'll give a couple of examples. For example, and this is sugya in Bava Metzia, a person takes it upon himself to work the land on behalf of the owner of the land, and he takes upon himself a penalty that if I don't work the land properly, if I don't do my utmost as a farmer to protect the field, etc., then I will accept upon myself a penalty. Or for example, the Gemara Bava Basra, where the Lova says, if I don't pay you up by a certain date, I accept upon myself a penalty. I'll pay you twice the amount that I borrowed from you. In these cases, there's a principle called asmachta, asmachta lo kanya. Rashi explains that he has total confidence, he relies upon himself, he actually believes that he will successfully implement all the obligations, fulfill all the obligations that he's taken upon himself. He will do the best job possible as a farmer to produce whatever the field is going to produce, maximize its productivity. Or in the case of the Lovel, he'll certainly have the money coming in, and he'll pay the Malvel on time. He never ever really intended to pay the penalty. He was somech on himself. That's called asmachta. Here too, in the case of a gambler, according to Rami Bar Choma, he relies on his own quote-unquote abilities to successfully win the gamble. Now, he thinks that he's the absolute best poker player on the face of the earth. And he really never had a full intention, the Gemiras Das, to lose and pay the money. That's called asmachta. However, Rashi says that according to Rav Sheshes, there's no asmachta in the case of gambling because the gambler realizes that he's not going to be able to control the outcome of the game. He's not going to be able to guarantee himself that he wins the game. In the case of a farmer, you can say, well, I'll do the best I can. I'll plant when I have to plant, I'll plow, and then I'll harvest when I have to harvest. In the case of a lover, he knows that he has money coming in, he'll pay up the chov when the time comes to pay up the chov. You know, there he totally relies upon himself. But in the case of gambling, he doesn't rely upon himself. And that is called, in the language of Rashi, you'll see this four lines up before the bottom of the page. Rashi says, Hachalo Samech Amidi. He's not relying on himself or on anything. Da'alo Yada. He really doesn't know the outcome of the game. He Natseach, he Lo Natseach. There's a 50% chance that he'll win, 50% chance he'll lose. And yet he entered into the game and he put his money on the table. In such a case, we assume he had complete gemiras das and he actually made a commitment to pay. And that's not called asmachta. So Rav Shesha says that gambling does not come under an asmachta because he realizes full well going into the game that he doesn't have control over the outcome of the game. And he realizes that basically he depends upon chance. And nevertheless, he made this commitment. It was an absolute commitment. It's called gemiras das, and it's not asmachta. Whereas Rami Bar Chama says, no, he's relying on himself. He actually believes he's living in this fantasy world that he can control the outcome of the game, and that for one reason or another, he will win, and he has no intention or no anticipation of losing and paying the money. And that's exactly similar to the case of a person who accepts upon himself a penalty if he won't do what he has to do in terms of farming, in terms of paying the loan back. In such a case, that's asmachta. So too, gambling is asmachta. So according to Rashi, and I emphasize Rashi because we're about to embark upon Shitas HaTosfos. Rashi understands that whether or not something is called asmachta depends upon A versus B. A means he totally relies on himself, and he assumes that he's going to be able to live up to that commitment. He has no intention whatsoever of paying any penalties or losing any money. That's called asmachta. Or B, a case where he realizes it's pure chance, it's out of his hands, it's dependent upon other factors which he has no control over. And he realizes statistically that there's a good chance he might have to pay. And nevertheless, he puts his money up front. That's not called asmachta. He was totally aware of the statistics and the outcome, one way or the other. And in that case, where he's totally aware of that, is gomar v'akni had a complete kaviras das. That's not called asmachta. So in order to guarantee that we're all on the same page today, meaning that we all understand Shitas Rashi, because it would be more or less futile to analyze Tosis if we don't know Rashi, because Tosis is going to try to disprove Rashi's Shita. So we have to make sure that we know Rashi's Shita. So let me formulate the following. There are two cases in two sugyas in Shas, before we get to Sanhedrin, where the Gemara says asmachta lo kanya. One is in Bav Metzia and one is in Bava Basra. The case in Bav Metzia is where he accepts upon himself a penalty if he doesn't fulfill his obligation vis-a-vis the protection and maximizing the productivity of the field. And the case in Bava Basra is where he accepts upon himself a penalty as a lova if he doesn't pay back the malva by a certain date. And in both these sugyas, the Gemara establishes asmachta lo kanya, and Rashi says, why is it asmachta? Because he's somech, asmachta v'loshon lismo, meaning he relies upon himself. So when he made that commitment to pay a penalty, if he never really thought, it never really seriously crossed his mind that he would ever come to that situation where that if would come into reality and he'd have to pay the penalty. So when he put his money down, he really didn't mean it at all. Because Rashi says he never anticipated having to pay that money. It's all biyad olasos. So if you want to, again, if you have your own Gemara, and you don't mind underlining things, everybody has their own different views on that, then if you look at Rashi and you count up from the bottom of the page, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 lines up, you'll see the words kol ze biyadi lasos. Do you see those words?
Yeah.
So you want to underline those four words. Just that's a short way of remembering Rashi. This is Rashi Shita Asmachta. That Asmachta applies whenever it fits into the category or the description called Kol Zebiyadi Lasos. Now let's try to understand the logic. Why does Rashi think that if it's Kol Zebiyadi Lasos, that's Asmachta?
Because
Anybody? Can anybody come step up to the plate and offer, you know, to get shechted if you get the wrong answer? No, I'm just kidding. But can anybody offer voluntarily? Of course, Asha, you're going to be my volunteer, right?
If nobody else. Yeah, because what Rashi is saying, that in this person's mind, he feels that he has the ability to do it. Right. So since he had never had any intention of really making the payment, right. And therefore, when it comes that he has to make the payment, it's something that he didn't want to do and wasn't willing to do, and that's why we say that's
not wonderful. So again, that's called Zebiyadi Lasa. So I assumed that I would do what I have to do. It's biyadi, it's within my control. I have control over the outcome, and if I'm going to do exactly what I have to do. He never anticipated that he would have to pay this penalty. That, according to Rashi, is asmachta. Rashi applies that, according to Rabbi Bar Chava, to the case of Mesachi Bekuvia, because Rashi says that in Mesachi Bekuvia, he believes in himself. He believes in himself. Let's see that in Rashi inside. Rashi, Dibra Maskal Asmachta, which is again about, let's say, close to 15 lines up from the bottom of the page. Hainu Dovar Sheinu Nosein Lo Midato El Somech Al Dovar Sheino. Interesting. Rashi almost gives him a grade here. He's Somech on something that really doesn't exist. He believes in his fantasy mind that he'll never have to pay. He's sowing on something that doesn't exist. There's somewhere he thinks, and again, these words you might want to underline, Shuhiyachol enatzeach. He thinks that he can beat the other guy. It's sort of like, imagine if you're playing in the Olympics and you're a runner, a fast runner, or you're a jumper, and you know that you're the best in the world, or at least you think yourself. So you fantasize. You think for sure you're going to win. You're going to win the game, and the outcome is going to be in your favor. And that's a gambler, according to Rami Bar Chama. When Rashi gets to Rav Sheshes, at the bottom, he says, Holo Yoda, three lines up from the bottom, Holo Yoda, Inatzeach, Ilonatzeach. Or if you go four lines up from the bottom, Amal Hochalo Sovich Amidi. He doesn't have anything to rely on. He realizes that the gambling and the outcome of the gambling is totally out of his hands. Let's say it's depend upon chance. And therefore he makes an absolute commitment, and that's what the last line in Rashi means, Asne V'gomar U'machne. He makes this tonight that he'll pay such money, or in the case of gamble, he'll put that money on the table and he'll realize that he's taking a very good chance that he'll lose that money, and Gomar V'ach. Now at this point, what I'd like to do is learn Tosus and see if we can figure out why Tosus rejects Rashi. Now, what would you say about this Tosus, the bottom Tosus of the page? Is it scary looking? How many lines is it? It's not that long, right?
Not that.
Yeah, the only problem is that it goes on to Daf Chaf Hey Amud Aleph. And it really is one of the longest Tosus in Shas. But don't get scared. Just get frightened. So we're not going to learn the entire Tosus. Tosus spends a lot of time trying to summarize the Shita of Rashi. But what we want to get up to is, if you take a look at the bottom of Chav Dalet Amud Beis, it'll say, Avol Rabbeinu Tam Hiksha Lepirush HaKudshus. Do you see such a thing?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you fast forward a little bit, so on the same page, he quotes another Gemara, in Bav Metzia, in Perek Ezu Neshech, and he writes Mashma Ipcha, which means that if we learn that Gemara, we're going to come to the exact opposite conclusion of Rashi, which is really interesting. You know, Rabbi Natan is the grandson of Rashi, and he's saying that there's a Gemara in Bav Metzia that says Pogfaker, the exact opposite of Rashi. So what we're going to try to do now is to try to plow through at least part of this Tosfos, what's ever relevant to that sugya in Bav Metzia and Perek Ezu Neshech, and try to get a sense as to what Tosfos, what Rabbeinu Tam saw in the sugya in Ezu Neshech that would contradict Rashi and imply Ipcha, the exact opposite of Rashi. Okay then? So that's just to set set a possible goal that hopefully B'siyata D'Shmaya will be able to achieve today. Now, let's see if we can fill in some of the details. The Amrinan Hasam, do you have that? So you're ready now, by now you're on the top of Chaf Hei, Amud Aleph, and it says the following. Haiman de Mekabel Zuzi Mechavre Lemazvin Le Chamra. So the Gemara says the following. Let's say, for example, I own a vineyard and I'm producing wine and I want to market the wine and I hire you, I commission you and I pay you Zuzim in order to sell my wine. Now, wine is one of those categories of merchandise which is very much time, its price, the market price, is very much time sensitive, very much reflective of time. Which means the following. We have, you know, anyone who takes economics 1.1 knows that there's something called the law of supply and demand. There's certain months of the year where the supply of wine in the market is greater than the demand, and that lowers the price, if you're following me. There are other times of the year where the supply is very limited and people will pay more for wine. Now, if let's say you're in the retail business, so you want to buy wine during that period of time when the market is flooded with wine, so to speak, and the price is depressed, so that you could sell it at a later period of time when the price of the wine goes up because wine is more rare, is less, the supply is more diminished. So what happens in this case where a person was commissioned by someone else? We'll say that Reuven is paying Zuzim to Shimon. And he wants Shimon to buy the wine when there's a great supply of wine in the market. That's called, in Hebrew, Zman HaBatzir. Right? Batzira is like Ktsira. Ktsira applies to Zroim. Let's say you have produce that's growing in the field, so you harvest them. That's called Ktsira. And in the case of olives, instead of harvesting, which is called Ktsira, the word in Lashon Kodesh is called Bitsira. Bitsira is Ktsira. It means that you harvest and you cut off the olives from the vine. And now, during this Zman HaBatzir, during that period of time when the olives mature on the vine, and there's a great massive volume of olives to be harvested through Zman HaBatzir.
Not grapes.
Did I say olives? Yeah, I'm sorry, I meant grapes. Yeah. Thank you so much, grapes. Right? Grapes. Right? So what do you have? You have a massive amount of wine in the market. Why? Because this is the season for harvesting grapes. So that's called Yayin Bezol. And you'll get the cheapest price for the wine at that point. And you know what? If you do that for me, I'll be able to sell the wine 6 months later when, you know, there's a very limited amount of wine to be purchased in the market. And therefore, the value and the market value of wine has gone up. Upasha. And let's call him Shimon, who was commissioned, was negligent. Velo Zavin. And he did not buy the wine during what we call the Zman HaBatzir, when the price for wine is depressed. Afterwards, the price of wine starts climbing, and he purchases the wine at the high price. So we have the increment in which the value of the wine went up, because the volume of the wine in the market is limited. So what happens in such a case? Now, again, to really appreciate this, we'd have to learn Masechta Bava Metzia and learn the laws of Nezikin, because in effect what happens is that Shimon is causing a loss to Reuven, because now Reuven is going to have to spend more money, and of course he's going to have profit. Less of a profit margin, right? So it says over there in Bava Metzia, Meshalim, which means that Shimon has to pay, he has to reimburse Reuven, Kida Azil Aparvasa Dizul Shvaput. Okay, so I'm going to read to you now the Hebrew translation here in the Masifta. He says, Klomar, de Meshalim lo lefi mechir hayayin bi oso makom shenikra kach. So again, this very strange kind of combination of words is referring to a place, a location. Visham, in that location, hoya ikar mechiras uknias hayayin lerov anoshim. That was a center, if you will, for the market of wine. So there's a tremendous amount of wine being sold. All the wine sellers end up at that location, and the buyers will show up and buy the wine, but there's a vast amount of volume of sellers, and whenever there's a vast amount of sellers, what happens to the price?
It goes down.
When there's more sellers than buyers, it goes down. Now, I don't know if there are more sellers than buyers in this case, but whatever it is, there are more sellers in this location than there are elsewhere, because all the sellers know that that's where people gather together in order to exchange, have a barter exchange between wine that's being sold and wine that's being purchased. Okay, now, Ka'amar Hasam. Now, at this point in the Gemara, Rav Ashi stands out high profile, and he says the following. He says, why is it that we only make him pay, this Shimon, who was commissioned to buy, why do we only make him pay based on a certain location, where although admittedly there is a low price to the wine in that place, but why not make him pay based on this location? You know, he was sent here locally, let's call it, and now when he's buying the wine, he's paying a lot more wine. In other words, it seems that this payment, which is called our parvasta dizulshipot, that is a kind of a standardized, we'll call it maybe medium or middle of the road kind of payment. Why shouldn't he be obligated to pay based on the increment in the price of wine here locally? And Rav Ashi comes up with the principle which is most relevant to our discussion today, called asmachta. The asmachta he. In other words, even if Shimon accepted upon himself to pay the difference in price, he never really anticipated paying it. And again, I'm using Rashi's logic over here. Ademaksha Shas. Now the Gemara says, I have a Mishnah that seems to contradict what you're saying, Rav Ashi. Mishnah, me from a Mishnah, im ovir velo avid, if he doesn't treat the field, so here's Shimon, who was commissioned to treat the field properly, to expand the productivity of the field, and Shimon takes upon himself, ashalim b'metva, I will pay you a penalty, a stiff penalty. Now what does metva mean? Metva means shuma, which shuma means that we try to evaluate how much produce this field, had it been treated properly, would have produced. and in fact it's producing a lot less. So now Shimon is going to have to pay the differential between the two. Why? Because he took upon himself a commitment to pay the difference between what was and what should have been, had he lived up to his responsibility. And we're not going to apply the principle of asmachta. And that's called Ashalim b'meitava, that when he took upon himself that he'll pay the exact difference of the value between how much the field would have produced and how much it actually produces as a result of his negligence, then he's obligated to pay that. Here too, in the case of Shimon, who was commissioned to buy and then sell, you know, the wine, why not force him to pay the difference between what the wine is going to cost now and what it should have costed had he purchased it at the Zman HaBatzer at the cheaper price. In other words, why, Rav Ashi, are you applying the principle of Asmachta Lokanya in the case of the wine sellers, but you're not applying the principle of Asmachta Lokanya in the case of the farmer? Why do we say here that in the case of the wine seller, he doesn't have to pay the higher market price, but rather he pays the market price as it is in a parvasa, etc. And yet here, in the case of the farmer, we're saying that he has to pay the beitav. He really has to pay the complete increment between what the field actually produced and what the field could have potentially produced. And the Gemara gives the following answer. And this is where Rabbeinu Tam is going to attack Rashi. Umeshani, the Gemara gives the answer, Hasam, there in the case, Gabiim Ovir Velo Avid, Ashalim Metva, there in the case of the farmer, he has to pay Mishum Dehavi Biyado, that because he left it into his own hands to work the field, and in the proper way, and he didn't live up to that self-commitment and that standard, that's not considered asmachta. Why? Because he relied on himself. Do you see where this is the exact opposite of Rashi? But anyway, let's just get the facts down on the ground, and then we'll compare this to our Rashi here in Sanhedrin. The Gemara is saying that the case of the farmer, he's obligated to pay the difference between what the field produced and what it could have produced, because when he made his commitment to pay that amount, it was biyado. So you want to underline the word biyado, davi biyado. And when it's biyado, lo havi asmachta. Whereas in the case of the yayin, that's not considered biyado. Why? I mean, you and I would have said it's biyado. In other words, during the Zman HaBatzir, it would seem that he would be able to find wine to buy at the lower price. And the answer is, that's what the Masifta adds over here, four words, the Shemalo Yimkarulo. It's not absolutely definitive that he will find a buyer. So in other words, he's going to have to put himself out and make a tremendous extra super effort in order to find a seller who would agree to sell him wine at that depressed price. Meaning a lot of the sellers are now holding on to their wine because they know that 6 months down the line this price of wine is going to go up. Now if you're up to the word Alma, do you have the word Alma in Tosus? Yeah. At this point, if you have the word Alma, you're ready for Rabbeinu Tam's attack against Rashi. Why? Alma, what do we see from this Gemara? That Hecha, I'm going to add the word Hecha, de lo havya biyado, in the case of Yayin, where he's not guaranteed that he'll be able to find the seller, because as we said before, the seller psychologically would rather hold on to the wine at this point because the value, the price of the wine is depressed, is havi tfei asmachta of lokanya. We're going to say that instead of paying the difference between what potentially he could have paid for the wine, which was a low price, And what he actually paid for the wine, which is a high price, because he waited till high season. And Shimon, who is commissioned to buy the wine at the lower price, will have to pay the difference in price. We're going to say that it's not considered asmachta. And he has to, just 1 second, what do we say? No, fakir, just the opposite. Alma, de lo havi biyado, havi tvei asmachta, my mistake. It means that in the case of the wine, what is Gemara saying? The Gemara is saying that in case of the wine, he will have to... Just 1 second, I just want to get this straight, sorry. Again, in the case of the agriculture, we're saying that he has to pay the meitva, which means it's not an asmachta. And why is it not an asmachta? Because it is biyado. He can do what he has to do in the field. And if he can do what he has to do in the field, that's called what? That's called biyado. And that undermines asmachta. But in the case of the wine where it's out of his hands, therefore, it's not an asmachta. Alma, de lo havi biyado, is havi tvei asmachta. Right? That we're saying that he doesn't have to pay the difference of the value of wine. Why? Because that's called an asmachta. And why is that an asmachta? Because it's a lo havi biyado. But in the case of the field, that's masha hoya biyado, and therefore that's not considered asmachta. Right? What are we saying? That in the case of the field, it's not considered asmachta. Again, we should really write this on the board just to make sure that we don't get mixed up. In other words, in the case of the farmer, the Gemara assumes that he has to pay the difference of price. That's called meitva. Right. Why? Because it's not called an asmachta. And why is it not called an asmachta? Because it's biyado. If you remember Rashi had said just the opposite. Rashi said that which is biyado is an asmachta because he never anticipated that he would pay. That which is out of his hands, Rashi says, then he has an absolute commitment because he realizes he's totally dependent upon the stars. So if you were to apply Rashi's logic to the two cases of Yayin, where he doesn't know whether he'll find a seller, as opposed to the field where he knows that he can implement exactly what he has to do and do the work for the field, you would have come to the conclusion based on Rashi that in the case of the farmer, that's considered asmachta because he relied totally on himself. He never had an inkling of an idea that he'd have to pay, whereas in the case where it's outside of his hands, and that's the case of the yayin, that should be mechayev, that should be gomer u'maknet. And the Gemara says just the opposite. The Gemara says that in the case of the wine, that's going to be considered asmachta. Why? Because it's not biyado. And if it's not biyado, he can't control the outcome. That's called an asmachta. And in the case of the farmer, the Gemara says, that's considered asmachta. That's not asmachta. And why is that not considered asmachta? Because it's totally dependent upon him. Rashi says just the opposite. Rashi says that if it's totally dependent upon him, that should be a reason why it is asmachta. And if it's outside of his control, Rashi holds, That's the logical reason why it is not an asmachta. The Gemara is saying that on the contrary, just the opposite, that in the case of the yayin, because it's outside of his control, that's called an asmachta. And in the case of the farmer, where it's in his control, that's not an asmachta. Rashi holds that because it's in his control, and it's biyado, he thinks he'll never have to pay, and if he never made a full commitment to pay, that's called an asmachta. But if it's outside of his control, Rashi says, that's not an asmachta, Rashi says. Because if it's outside of his control, he realizes that, you know, he's got to put his money where his mouth is. If he made this commitment, he's going to have to pay. So this is the kasha of Rabbeinu Tam on Rashi. All right, let's go back to our Gemara. I mean, I think in an even shift, maybe we'll try to figure out if we can defend Rashi against Rabbeinu Tam. But it's really fascinating because both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam make asmachta or lo asmachta contingent upon whether it's biyodo or not biyodo, but in two opposite directions. Rashi assumes that it's biyodo that makes it into an asmachta because he never really thought that he would have to pay. And Rabbeinu Tam says adarabba, that because it is biyodo, that itself means if it's biyodo, then it's not an asmachta. Rashi says if it's biyodo, it is an asmachta. He summarizes Rabbeinu Tam, and he says the following: She'im kiyum adover toli biyad acherim. Right, that would be the case of the wine, the purchasing the wine. Is yesh baze asmachta? So dafka because it's acherim, Rabbeinu Tam says it's an asmachta. Aval kshekiyum adover toli biyado. Like, for example, in the case of the farmer, ein baze asmachta. Now, let's ask the following question. According to Rabbeinu Tam, when we get to Masachek Bekubia, which according to Rav Sheshes is not an asmachta, and according to Rabbeinu Tam, something that is totally biyodo, and he says the following, that according to Rav Sheshes, why is it that Masachek Bekubia is not an asmachta? After all, Rabbeinu Tam Shita is that only if it's biyado, it's not an asmachta. But here in the case of gambling, you can't say it's biyado. So if it's not biyado, it should be like the case of the wine, which the Gemara classifies as asmachta. How do we understand Rav Sheshes? He says, Mikeva shekol echav yechen rotzel arviach, both of the poker players expect or want to win, is memela. What happens is machnel chaver b'tzura buchletes. He makes an absolute kinyan to his friend. Kedeshim hu yenatzef. So that if he wins, then his chaver was machne him, and therefore the kinyan is going to be valid. So he says basically, according to Rav Sheshes, mesachik bekubya is the exception to the rule of asmachta lo kanya. Meaning, Rabbi Bar Chob is correct that gambling is called an asmachta. Why? Because it's a kiyum hadover she'eno toli biyado. And if it's eno toli biyado, just 1 second, in kiyum hadover is toli biyado, kiyum hadover toli biyado, then according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's not an asmachta, correct? Why? Because that's the case of the field where it's toli biyado and it's not an asmachta. So then you'll ask the following question. If Rami Bar Chama assumes that each guy thinks he's going to win, then he's right. That would be an asmachta. So what do we do with Rav Sheshes? Does everybody hear the kasha? Yeah. Let me go over the question one more time. We're asking a kasha on Rabbeinu Tam, and the answer to this question is going to be that gambling is an exceptional case. It doesn't fit into the general rules and regulations. What are Rabbeinu Tam's rules and regulations? In the case of wine that's eino toli biyado, we call that an asmachta. But when it's toli biyado, then it's not an asmachta. And that's why in the case of the farmer, it's not called an asmachta. Let's take Rami Bar Chama's logic. In the case of gambling, he thinks it's toli biyado. He thinks he's a great gambler, and therefore he's going to definitely win. So in that case, if we take the logic of Rabbeinu Tam, then we will come to the conclusion that this is called an asmachta. Why is it asmachta? Because whenever he thinks that what? Just 1 second. According to Rabbeinu Tam, whenever he thinks that it's totally in him, so then it's not an asmachta. It's only when it's totally b'acherim. The totally b'acherim, meaning it's not biyado. If it's not biyado, then that's called an asmachta. Oh, so I'm sorry. Let me just change one line. Here's the kasha of Rabbeinu Tam on himself, right? If we're saying that whenever it's out of his hands, like in the case of the yayin, that's called asmachta, then gambling is out of his hands. So that's called an asmachta. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, Bishleim, I understand the shita of Rami Bar Chava. Rami Bar Chava is based on the fact that he realizes it's out of his control. He cannot win, guarantee that he wins the game. And it's totally v'das acherim, like in the case of the Yayin, will he find a mocher is willing to sell it to him? And in such a case, according to Rabbeinu Tam, we say that's called an asmachta. Asmachta means whenever it's out of his control. So now, we're stuck with Rav Sheshes. Why does Rav Sheshes hold that gambling is not an asmachta? L'chor, it's a classic case of an asmachta, in the fact that it's not totally v'yodo. You follow? You know, so Rabbeinu Tam is not introducing Rashi's logic that, well, he's a big shot and he's living in a fantasy world and he thinks he can guarantee the outcome of the gambling game. No. Right. We're saying that it's Eino Biyado. He cannot guarantee. He may be able to win the game, but he might lose the game. It's like the case of the Mocher, that he might find a Mocher who's willing to sell him the wine at the cheaper price. He might not. And in such a case, where it's outside of his hands, is where Rabbeinu Tam holds that that's exactly what Asmachta Lokanya is all about. So now we're stuck with Rav Sheshes. How do we understand that according to Rav Sheshes, gambling is not considered Asmachta and should fit into the classic definition of Asmachta? Rami Bar Chava is correct. So Rabbeinu Tam says that gambling is different. Why? Because I want you to be willing to pay me if I win. And you want that I should be willing to pay you if an event that you win. So we make an agreement, and that's the nature of the game. In other words, the game requires that we both agree in a consensual agreement that I'll pay you and you'll pay me. In the language of Rabbeinu Tam, he says that each one really wants to gain something, he wants to profit, is machna l'chavero, he makes an absolute kinyan. Okay, so now Rav Moshe, we're back to Daf Chav Dalet Amud Beis, and the Gemara asks, "My Beinayu, what's the difference between Rami Bar Chama, who says that even an occasional gambler, insofar as Asmachta Lokanya is considered a Ke'en Gazlan, and Rav Sheshes, who says it's all a matter of whether he's Osek B'Yishuvo Shel Olam, Ikar Beinayu DeGomar." He has another profession, so he's got income from another profession. He is actually Osik B'Yishuva Shel Olam, although on occasion he gambles. According to Rami Bar Chava, he's Pasul, because Asmachta Lokanya, and he is kind of Ke'en Gazel, like a thief. Again, why is it Asmachta? That's Machlokas Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam holds, I'm sorry, Rashi holds that it's an asmachta because he really depends upon himself to win the game, and he never really expected to lose the game, so he never had a complete gemira stas. That's Rashi's sheet as to why, according to Rami Bar Chava, gambling is asmachta. And then we have Rabbeinu Tam, who says just the opposite, that since gambling is totally beyond acherim, then it's like the case of the Yayin, where we say that it is an asmachta lokanya because it's totally b'das acherim and it's not biyodo. So the Gemara says that according to Rami Bar Chama, whether it's Rashi's interpretation or Rabbeinu Tam's, there is, even in the case of an occasional gambler, a ke'en gzela situation. And Rav Sheshes holds that gambling is not asmachta. And according to Rashi, the reason for that is because he realizes up front that he doesn't have any guarantee of winning this game, so he made a complete decision. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, even though it's Tali Vidas Acherim, it's not called Asmachta because they had this mutual agreement that they were mocking each other, the Mammon, from the get-go. So the Gemara now asks to find Tanan. We have a Mishnah, Amar Rav Yehuda, Emasai, when is a Mesachi Bekuri Apostle? Bisman She'ein Lahem Umnus Elahu. In a case where he only has an exclusive income from gambling. Aval Yeshlem Umnus Shalohu, if he has an alternative job with an income, is Ksherit. Says the Gemara Alma, we see quite clearly, time of the Masnis and the logic that underlies the psul of Mesachi Bekuri in our Mishnah is because Eino Osek B'Yishuvah Shel Olam. He has no alternative, he's a full-time gambler. Is Kashal Rabbi Bar Chama? According to Rabbi Bar Chama, why did Rabbi Yehuda have to limit the case of a psula besach mekumi to the case of an exclusive gambler? That's all he does with his life. When in truth, even in the case of an occasional gambler, he should be pasul. Why? Because we're going with Rabbi Bar Chama's logic that it's ke'ein gazlan, because asmachta lo kanya. And if you'll answer the plegi rabbanan al lady Rabbi Yehuda is entitled to his own opinion, but the chachamim have a different opinion. The chachamim would say that a masachik b'kuvia is disqualified straight across the board, whether or not he's osik b'yishuv shalom is irrelevant, and therefore Rabbi Bar Chama would reflect the sheet of the chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda has a different opinion. In other words, the Gemara is saying now that Rabbi Bar Chama will have to admit that Rabbi Yehuda fits. You know, he's on the page of Rav Sheshes, and the whole issue is whether he's Oseik B'Yishuv Shel Olam, but that doesn't tie the hands of Rabbi Bar Chama to accept the Shita Chachamim, that even in a case where he is Oseik B'Yishuv Shel Olam, and he's only a part-time gambler, he's possible because of King Zela, because Asmach Delo Kanya. So the Gemara is not happy with this. The Gemara thinks that there's a clear-cut proof that Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing with the Tanakhama, but rather he's interpreting the Tanakhama. And that's based on a statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We'll soon see it's a similar statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Kol makom sha'amar Rabbi Yehuda. Whenever you see the language, again, this is all a reflection of what we call the literary style of the Mishnah. Who edits the Mishnah, everybody? Who edits the Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, correct? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi adds a Tana at the end of the Mishnah, he's very careful. If he adds the word Amosai, as if to say, when does the previous formulation, the previous halacha apply, or Ubameh, which is also a question, and in what circumstances does this apply, is Eino Ba, he's not coming to argue, but Eino Elo Lefarish is Divrei Chachamim. The last statement in the Mishnah, which is attributed to one particular Tana, is coming to interpret the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Amosai. That I'm not going to go as far as to accept Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi in the case of Bamer, but I will accept Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi that whenever Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in the Mishnah uses the term Amosai, then Lefarish, then it means that he's coming to interpret rather than disagree. So when it says Bameh, is Lachlok. According to Rabbi Yochanan, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi, the word Bameh indicates that he's coming to disagree. Now let's go back to our Mishnah. What does it say in our Mishnah?
Amosai.
Right, Amosai. Om Rabbi Yehuda Amosai. So then both Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, two of the great giants after Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the first generation of Amoraim, they both agree that Amosai is coming Lefarish, which means Rabbi Yehuda does not argue with the Tanakhama, and even the Tanakhama would say that the only psul of the Sachik ben Kuvia is a person who's not Osik b'Yishuv Shalolam, which means that the entire consensus of Tanoim in our Mishnah would reject Rabbi Bar Chama. That's not good news for Rabbi Bar Chama. Rabbi Bar Chama cannot argue with the entire consensus, a unanimous principle that's formulated by all the Chachamim, all the Tanoim in the Mishnah, that the psul of Misaki Mekubi is only because Eino Osei, for what? Bishuvo Shalom. But as far as a person who's an occasional gambler is concerned, he's not possible. So the Gemara says, Gavra Karamis. You're asking me a kasha on Rabbi Bar Chama, who himself is a contemporary of Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan. From Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi, you can't ask me a kasha. You can't raise an objection against Rabbi Bar Chama from Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi. Rabbi Bar Chama is not committed to accept Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi, nor to accept Rabbi Yochanan. Mar Savar Pligi, Mar Savar Lo Pligi. In other words, even though even though Rabbi Bar Chama is of the opinion that whenever Rabbi Yehuda appears at the end of a Mishnah, he's arguing against the Tanakhama, and there's a machlokas between the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda, even if it says the word Me'emasai, whereas Rabbi Shurban Levi is of the opinion that there's no machlokas, that when it says Me'emasai, it means he's coming to interpret the Mishnah. And now the Gemara is going to ask a kasha on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan from a brisa, because according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, since it says Me'emasai in the Mishnah, it means that it was a universally accepted principle amongst the Tanoim that the psul of Mesachik Bekuvia is because Eino Osek B'Yeshuvah Shel Olam Velo Pligi. Says the Gemara, I'm going to quote to you a brisa, you can't tell me that Rabbi Yehuda and Chachal both agree in our Mishnah, because we have a brisa, and the brisa says, "Bein sheyesh lo umnus shelohu, ubein sheein lo umnus elohu, hareis apostle." Whether or not he is a full-time mesachek bekubya, that's called ein lo umnus elohu, all he does with his life and his total income is because he's mesachek bekubya, or in a case of Yeshlo Umnus Acheres, which Umnus Shalohu, in both cases, he's apostle. Now, according to you, you here means Rabbi Shimon Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, there is no such Tana in existence. There is no such Shita, because in our Mishnah, Me'emasai is coming to interpret the Tanakhama and tell us exactly when the Chachamim, under what circumstances they apostle, a Mesachi Bekubia, and that only applies if he is a full-time Mesachi Bekubia. Well, guess what? What are we going to do with this brisa? See, according to Rami Bar Chama, this brisa is great. It's a support text for him, because here you see clearly that amongst the Tanoim, there is a shita that even in a case of someone who has umnus shalohu, meaning other than Mesachim Bekuvia, so he is Osek B'Yeshuvah Shalom, nevertheless he's possible. And then you take this brisa and you put it back in our Mishnah and you assume that Me'emasai and Rabbi Yehuda and Amish is coming to argue against the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama's sheet is reflected in this brisa, and the Tanakhama would hold that under all circumstances, even an occasional gambler who has another source of income is still considered possibly aimless because he's Ke'ed Gazlan, and that's based on the principle of Asmach Delokanya. So now the Gemara is going to reject this argument and say that really Rabbi Yehud is coming to interpret our Mishnah. Vahi, you have the Brisa that clearly maintains that even in the case of a part-time gambler, nevertheless he's possible Yehudus. Is that Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Tarfonhi? So Gemara is now going to quote another Brisa to establish that according to Rabbi Tarfon, he's the one who holds that even in a case of an occasional gambler, he would be posuliatus. Now, keep in mind, Rabosai, that Rabbi Tarfon did not address the question of an occasional gambler, but rather Rabbi Tarfon addressed the case and the question of asmachta. Not exactly the asmachta that we've been dealing with until now, which is what's called choshen mishpat dinei mavanos, but rather a case of a person who accepted upon it a commitment, knowing full well that this commitment is conditional, and that conditional is out of his realm, and that's going to be a mishnah in Masechta Nazir. Now a Nazir is someone who says Hareini Nazir, those two words. So make sure you don't say those two words, except if you're learning a Mishnah. Mm-hmm. But what happens in the following case, where let's say there are two people are sitting next to each other, and somebody passes by. One of the two sitters makes a declaration that this guy who just passed by, you should know he's a Nazir. And his friend says to him, what are you talking about? I know him for the last 50 years. He's not a Nazir. So the first one who is absolutely convinced that he wants to demonstrate his conviction that the first guy who passed by is in fact a Nazir, he says, I'll show you how much I believe, how much I'm convinced that he's a Nazir. And he says, you know what? He says, Hareini Nazir Kamoso, that I will be a Nazir just like he is a Nazir. In other words, he's saying that if I am telling you the truth, that this fellow who passed by is indeed a Nazir, then I myself am a Nazir. That's called Hareini Nazir im ha'emes kemosi v'hu Nazir. The other fellow says Hareini Nazir im ha'emes kemoso kemosi she'eno Nazir. Now both of them sitting down have accepted upon themselves Nazirus. The first one accepted upon his Nazirus if in fact the passerby was a Nazir, and the second one accepted upon himself Nazirus if in fact, as he claims, the passerby was not a Nazir. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bishum Rabbi Tarfon Li'olam Ein Echad Behem Nazir. Neither of the two proclamations of the two sinners is binding. Why? L'fishalo nitna Nazirus El Lafla. Now those, how many words is those six words we're going to put in just for 5 minutes, we'll put it in abeyance, you know, in deep freeze, because we want to explain the logic of the Gemara. The logic of the Gemara is that when a person accepts Nazirus, he's got to be absolutely convinced and certain that his Kabbalah is an acceptance of Nazirus. Rabbi Tarfon is telling us here in this brisa that in a case of a suffix, if a person commits himself to observe Nazirus and he's in doubt about it, in such a case the Nazirus is not binding. And if we apply the logic of Rabbi Tarfon to the case of gambling, when the man made a commitment to pay in event that he loses, his commitment was a suffix. He really didn't know whether he's going to win or he's going to lose. Such a commitment is not binding. And therefore, if you take away his money, that's called Kein Gzela. Meaning, what the Gemara is going to do here is make an analogy between Rabbi Tarfon and his Zerus and our case of a Masachik Pekubi of a gambler, an occasional gambler. And the Gemara is going to say that the principle of Asmachta Lokanya, as Rabbi Bar Choma formulated it in the case of a gambler, is really just a spin-off of a greater principle which was formulated by Rabbi Tarfon. And that is that when a person makes a commitment, he doesn't know for sure that that commitment is going to come to fruition. That commitment is not binding. So we're not going to say that because he thinks that this fellow who's crossing his path is a Nazir, therefore he accepted it on himself, Nazirus, right, when he said, Hareini Nazir im hu Nazir. But rather we're going to say that since there's an element of doubt, and we're not sure whether or not this person passing by is in fact a Nazir, then that's not called a Hischaivus Mivadai, it's not a certain Hischaivus, but rather it's a Hischaivus Misafek. And a Hischaivus Misafek is not valid, and it doesn't generate a Chiyuv of Nazirus. The Gemara now, by analogy, is going to apply the logic of Rabbi Tarfon to the case of the Sakhi Pekubia. Here too, when he puts the money on the table as he enters into this gambling thing, he doesn't have a vada yischaivus. He doesn't know. Will he win? Will he not win? So let's go back to the Braisa. The Braisa says that a Masachi Pekubi is possible, even if he's only an occasional Masachi Pekubi. That reflects the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, quoted by Rabbi Yehuda, that this is called an asmachta, that this is not an absolutely binding hischaivus, and therefore, if he takes the money and runs, that's called a gazlan. The braisa, therefore, will disqualify such a gambler, even though he has a business, even though he works at an occupation from 9 to 5, and he's also the Yishuv Shalola. The Chachamim in our Mishnah are of the opinion that when a person makes a tnai, and it's not, you know, it's not in his yad v'yado, he cannot implement that right? The Chachamim in our Mishnah are of the opinion again that if he makes a t'nai and it's not completely in his hands, lasoso, is therefore the Chachamim say that since it's a kind of a suffix situation, well, I'm sorry. Well, I made just one calculated mistake, and then we'll be able to finish this year. We're going now according to Rabbi Shimon ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Shimon ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan hold that the Amosai means that Rabbi Yehuda and Amish is coming to interpret the Chachamim, which means that the Chachamim hold that only in the case of a full-time, absolutely committed gambler, only he's possibly Eidus, because he's not Osik Bishum Shalom, but a part-time gambler is not considered a Gazla, which means that it's not called a Smachta. So why is it not called a Smachta? And the answer is because if it's outside of his hands, right, this is what Rashi explained in Rav Sheshes, then he makes an absolute commitment. But the Braisa, which quotes an opinion that in the case of a gambler, this reflects the sheet of Rabbi Bar Chama, the Gemara is now identifying that Braisa as Rabbi Tarfon, that in event that a person makes some sort of commitment that's iffy, it's not a definite commitment, that commitment is not binding, hence the Nazir, and when we don't know for sure who is what is the identity and the status of the person who passes by, whether he's a Nazir or not, such as Chayvus Haredi Nazir is not binding. If we apply that logic to a gambler who says, well, I may win, I may not win, and I'm willing to pay the money, that willingness is really an iffy kind of willingness, it's really an asmachta, and therefore Lokanya, hence is an Isig Zela. This is Rabbi Tarfon's opinion. And that's the way both Rabbi Shimon ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan will see it. They will not see any indication whatsoever in our Mishnah to the Shita of Rabbi Tarfon. Our Mishnah from beginning to end, because of the word Me'emasai, is holding that only if he's Eino Osik Bishuv Shalom, then he's a Gazan and he's Posel. So forget about Rabbi Tarfon. That's Rabbi Tarfon's own Shita, but that's a Das Yochid. Hence, Rav Sheshes will not accept anything but a person who's exclusively a gambler and is Eino Osek Bishuv Shalom. Rami Bar Chama, on the other hand, will insist that the word Me'emasai proves nothing, and in fact the Chachamim rejected Rabbi Yehuda, and I'm going to prove it to you from Rabbi Tarfon, and Rabbi Tarfon himself holds that even an occasional gambler is possible because it's Asmachta. And how do I see that Rabbi Tarfon, for the fact that Rabbi Tarfon assumes that any Eschaivus, any commitment that a person makes that's iffy, and it's a suffix, is not a valid and binding commitment. Okay, Rabbi Osai, here's where we're going to stop, and believe that tomorrow we're going to talk about Malve Beridus. Okay, then?
Why isn't the case?
Can somebody just open this door? I just want to see. I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to teach.
Yeah. In the case, of the Beridus that we see before, that the person's going to pay, he's going to. He borrowed the money and he's going to give it back in time. If he doesn't give it back in time, he's going to pay the extra. Why is that ribbous?
Yeah, we touched on that the other day. Obviously, we have to learn more about ribbous in such a case. It seems that ribbous only applies if you add money to a halva. But if you take a new halva, that's called mashlish eshtar.
So it has to be like set up.
Right. He sets it up as a new halva and he says, look, if I don't pay by such a date, then it's going to be considered as if you lent me 1,000. So that's already a new halva. It's not a tag on of an extra payment.
Okay.
On the
Okay. Good.